Welcome to Closer to Venus. I'm Johnny Burke, and today's guest is Christina Kanz. She is a coach, hypnotherapist, and nutritionist, and she's also had mediumship abilities since she was a child. She also has experience navigating past lives. Tonight, we'll talk about an experience she had recently where she was able to channel a well-known musician who left us almost 30 years ago. Christina, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Hello.
I just want to let our listeners know that you have been on the show before. It was a while ago. I believe it was last January. And tonight we're going to talk about an experience that you had recently while you were listening to the new Lana Del Rey album. Why don't you tell us what happened?
Well, for those of you who have not heard Lana's new album, I really suggest you check it out. Not that I work for her anyway, but it's a beautiful album, beautiful music. I've been a fan of hers for many years. And I was listening to it, and I love music, and I love film, I love all art. But I don't typically get involved in the artist. I don't get obsessed with whoever's created the art. I just appreciate the art for what it is. This time, though, I thought, I'll actually Google Lana and learn more about who she is. So I did some Googling, and I found a quote from Courtney Love that said, Lana and Kurt Cobain were the only two musical geniuses she had ever met.
And interesting.
Coming from her, she's met a lot of musicians and she's met so many people over the years. So her saying that really stood out for me. I was like, oh, wow, okay, that's massive. Growing up, I had been a Nirvana fan, not a massive one. I had Nevermind. And I loved grunge and I loved all the music coming out of Seattle, but I didn't really know too much about Kurt Cobain. I didn't buy In Utero because it just felt kind of dark to me. But I remember when he died and I remember Courtney Love. I had lived through this. So I didn't really know too much about them. I just appreciated their music. But seeing that quote really jumped out at me. As I was sitting there, I started to hear this voice start to talk. Typically, when that happens, I usually only get messages from people who are coming through to tell a loved one something. So it's usually a friend or a family member. And in this instance, it was not either of those things. It was Kurt Cobain. And this is really awkward for me to even share or talk about because I haven't had an experience like this ever in my life. And at first I was really cynical. I didn't, because you have to be careful with who's trying to come through, what's trying to come through. And I have very strict boundaries around how I channel and who I channel. I don't even call it channeling. I just call it a conversation because you can take on the death trauma and the trauma that the spirit had in their lifetime. So you have to be really careful.
It's draining, isn't it? That part.
Well, I think there are a lot of psychic mediums who are physically unwell because they channel too much. Because it takes you out of your body. And again, it allows other things to come in. Like with Kurt, at one point, I could see the entities that were attached to him because he had been a drug addict and, you know, experienced a lot of trauma and abuse as a child. So there were definitely entities. So I had to be very careful with him at first. It was a really bizarre experience. It really lasted almost 2 weeks, the first week of which was really intense. But it was like any relationship in that I was like, okay, well, I'm open to talking to you. We both had to establish trust. He would tell me bits and pieces and then see how I responded to it. Because I was just open to it. I was like his therapist for 2 weeks. I was just listening. He kept telling me more and more and more. And then at one point, I did have to kind of put the boundaries up strongly because I think it was on the third day. He was just so excited to talk to me. He came into the house big time and was like turning on fans, messing with electricity. He was messing with my son's Kindle when we were laying in bed. He was like moving the Kindle all around and moving the fan. And I kept wanting to go back and smoke. I used to smoke American Spirits, the yellow pack. It was just like my favorite thing ever. I haven't smoked in so many years, decades. And I kept having this craving for American Spirits. And I was like, this is not me. This is him. And at one point, he got so excited. I live in a neighborhood in Australia that's very residential. And the wildlife really aren't, there's birds, but that's about it. And I was trying to get my work done and I was at my desk and he's just constantly trying to talk to me. And all of a sudden I see this kangaroo come bouncing into my yard that's taller and bigger than me. I mean, it was huge, it was massive. I'm 5'6", so this was probably at 5'8". And it's just like bouncing all around the yard, like it can't get out. I've got high fences. I was actually scared. I thought it was going to hurt itself or hurt somebody or damage property. And then I could hear Kurt laughing. He just thought that was hilarious. He brought this kangaroo. And I'm like, all right, mate. Like, so then I just got serious. And I was like, let's just really talk. And he kind of told me a lot more after that. That was really pretty amazing. So,
what kind of things was he telling you?
Right off the bat, he wanted to talk about his legacy. He's really sad that he's known for his drug abuse and his suicide. He does not want that to be his legacy. He does not want his fans and especially kids to be influenced by that. It really upsets him, makes him really sad. His art and his music, it was just so important to him. That's how he wants to be known. Yes, there were drugs, but the way it was portrayed in the media, he hates the media, that's for sure. And he was telling me, showing me how they would manipulate a lot. The media was used against him in a variety of ways, I will say that. And it was used by very clever people to manipulate him. He was very much trapped. And it's funny, he was really, really very nice. And he had a really funny sense of humor. And he said, you know, I created Nirvana as a way to escape, as a way to create freedom for myself, a freedom in the sense, freedom of expression, freedom, authenticity. He wanted to create a vehicle in which he could create and develop art and be himself with total freedom. And ultimately, Nirvana became a prison. He was trying to escape it towards the end. He was trying to shed the persona that he had created. And he was showing me how Nirvana was only around a couple of years. And then all of a sudden he was like this global superstar. And he was saying it was just so hard to change that rapidly. Like his identity went from just a kid in this small town playing music with big dreams to a global celebrity with this power and influence that he never imagined he'd ever have. And he became a father and a husband, and everything just so changed so rapidly. It was really, really hard for him to manage that and for him to navigate that. He didn't have a lot of support or people he could trust, especially his own family. And he didn't really have anyone who understood what he was going through. So he did the best he could, but he acknowledges that he definitely could have made better decisions, but he's really proud of his art and what he created. He gets really upset when people call it grunge. He is like, it is not grunge. It is a combination of punk and pop. And how dare they call it grunge? It just so happened he was from that geographical area. His music is very different from the other bands that came out of Seattle.
I would say so, yeah.
It's very different.
It was.
And he purposely created the music in that way because that's what felt authentic for him. And he is proud of its timelessness. He thinks the other grunge bands sound very dated in some ways, but his music does not. It's a timeless piece of art. And he's very, very proud of that. And he was talking to me about what he learned as an artist. And he said, to create art, to be someone who, you know, creates really impactful art, you kind of need three ingredients. And the three ingredients are, number one, civil disobedience. So completely just doing your own thing, saying no if anyone tries to influence you, like the corporate people. Number two, creativity, is being open to receive whatever creative inspiration comes through. I don't know if people know this about him, but he was really psychic. And he used to channel this creativity and put it into his music. He was very talented. He could draw, he could paint, he could sculpt, he could make music. Like, he was just this walking creator. And he just allowed it to come through, and he didn't try to stop it. And he was very protective of it. The third ingredient, he said, is authenticity, to remain true to yourself. And to just be who you are. That's a really, really powerful combination. He was not conscious of this when he was alive. He's conscious of it now. But he wants people to know him for that, for his authenticity, for his creativity, and for his civil disobedience. He wants everyone to kind of do that, because if we all did that, the earth would be a really different place.
He sounds somewhat happy. Would you agree? Or is it kind of hard to tell?
From what I gathered from our discussions, he is accepting. He's accepted what's happened. He does not want people to think he killed himself. The suicide thing is untrue. Let's just put it that way. He does not want his legacy to be that he killed himself, because that affected so many people in a really negative way. And he's really upset that his legacy is used to manipulate people. He works with other artists to help them. I get that he does help Lana, and that's why he came through. He tries to keep them safe, because he was put in a position because of his fame where he just became a commodity to people. And for he was making a lot of people a lot of money, and he was not really aware of his commodification, because he was a pretty empathetic person, very empathetic. So for him, the reason Nirvana became such a trap is because he felt a responsibility to take care of people in a way. And at the end, he was like, all right, no, I'm done. Like, I have to get out of this, because he was so dedicated to his art and his creativity. He was showing me, like, probably the most important person for him was John Lennon. I get that John was helping him create his music, like they were working together. And artists have to shed their skin and create new types of art. A true artist is someone who's constantly changing and evolving and trying and taking risks. And so for him, the Nirvana persona had to be shed, because he was ready to try other things and experiment and explore. Because he was a commodity, shedding that skin was going to be a huge financial loss for a lot of people involved. He really wasn't able, when he was alive, to understand that. He wasn't able to understand sort of people and how they thought that way. That was just so bizarre for him. But now that he's passed, he can see that. He helps people because he doesn't want anyone to be put in a position like him, where they become a commodity. He's very protective of artists.
So you're saying that he actually helps musicians now from where he is, influences them. I've actually heard that about quite a few people. Lennon, actually, Paul McCartney was quoted as saying Lennon still helps him write songs, or did very recently. So it's not altogether shocking. Really, really interesting. What I've been told about, you know, when we're growing up Catholic, that suicide victims go to a very bad place. That doesn't really sound like what happened to him. But then again, you said he didn't commit suicide. So did he tell you what happened?
Yeah, it took a while to get there. And as a kid, I was, I think, 13 when he died. And I remember hearing about it. I literally saw Kurt Loder on MTV News announce it. And I remember kind of thinking, it didn't really make sense to me, but I was really young and I just kind of parked it. I didn't get sucked into it, like the drama of it or the suspicion. I was like, that's really sad. And I'm sad to hear that. That's too bad. So when he told me, at first he kept saying, I created a prison. My life had become poison. And then eventually, it was kind of at the end of the first week I spent with him, I think we had developed a certain level of trust. And he said, you know, I didn't kill myself. And it didn't feel like suicide. With suicide comes a certain level of shame and regret, even on the other side. And even people I've spoken to who have OD'd, there's a lot of shame and regret even with that, because it's almost an unconscious way of killing themselves. With him, there's not a ton of shame and regret, like a little bit around even using drugs. He was like, drugs are terrible. No one should use them. They do not help your art. He's not a fan of drugs. And he said they were used to control him. He didn't know then that that was what was going on, because drugs did help him cope with that insane amount of change that he experienced rapidly in like a year. And they were fun and they were a nice way for him to escape, but ultimately they weren't great. So he said, I didn't kill myself. I just feel so weird even saying this. because it goes against the narrative.
Well, definitely. I'm pretty sure there has been at least one book written about.
Tons of books. So I never knew any of it. I didn't know there was this whole group of people out there pushing for this case to be reopened and reexamined. But yeah, he said very clearly, I did not kill myself. I was murdered. The way he showed it to me was there were a lot of people involved. Three men. He was in Seattle. He was not at his house. He was staying in a motel. There were three men involved, two of whom he knew. One of whom was kind of the overseer, more like a professional person there to kind of manage things. And they came into the motel room, just one of them. He showed me, he just kept saying, they put me to sleep. So they did something to put him to sleep, either with heroin or some kind of other drug. And then this friend of his, it was someone he knew. I don't get that it was a close friend, but it was someone that he knew came into the hotel and was sort of setting up this scene where they were pretending to hang out. They're like, oh, yeah, hey, man, you know, whatever. And then he was put to sleep. And then this other kind of professional person, handler, manager, came in and they took him out of the motel room and brought him back to his house. And he said he was put in a greenhouse because that was just like the easiest kind of place to put him. It was close to the driveway and he was pretty much unconscious. They dragged him up there and out of the house. So that kind of created this plausible deniability. And then the third guy was at the house. So once they got him to the house, they brought him up to the greenhouse. I think the way he showed me was there was more drugs and then they shot him. So he definitely didn't pull the trigger. He was murdered. He was put to sleep so that they could shoot him. And the whole scene was staged. And he's really, really upset that people close to him who he thought really loved him would believe that he killed himself. And especially in that way, he's kind of offended that he's like, I wouldn't have just stabbed a note with a pen. And he just wouldn't have done that in that way. He's like, yeah, OD'd, sure, but shot, no. And he did show me one of the people involved. After I was shown this, I Googled because I'm like, what is going on? The narrative being woven is definitely one of suicide. And even the conspiracy, or not, I won't even call them conspiracy theorists. I'd say seekers of truth. The way they describe the scene as happening wasn't this. He did show me one of the people involved. I found one of the people by accident. And when I saw the picture of them, I almost threw up. Like the emotions I felt were just such disgust and betrayal. I didn't know who this person was, but it was one of the nannies that his wife at the time had hired, was a heroin addict. Everybody involved, except for the professional person, were heroin addicts, so they were controlled.
Very sinister accounts. I don't know why someone or some entity would come through and tell you all this just for kicks. Why do you suppose he came through while you're listening to Lana Del Rey, and why do you suppose it came through to you? Any clue?
Yeah. So I'm writing a book about creativity, and I think creativity is our superpower. I think we all have gifts. I think it's our almost duty to share those gifts with the world and to use those gifts. I think that a lot of mental illness and suffering is created because we are not being creative. So I started writing this book and was listening to Lana. And so he came through because he was excited. A, I liked his music. And B, because I'm as excited about creativity as he is. So he just wanted to hang out and talk about creativity and authenticity and civil disobedience. It was like finding a friend, somebody who understands what's happened to you. And a lot of the conversation we had, he was helpful to me because I'm not saying I'm a global celebrity or an artist at his level, or I mean, I'm nothing like that. But there were some experiences in life that I've had. And he was like, you understand this. And he would show me different things in my life and then how they link back to his own experiences. And so it was just him saying, hey, I see you. I understand. I'm so glad that you're practicing civil disobedience. You're being authentic and you understand and love creativity. And that's just all it was. And I'm just so grateful that I could spend that time with him and learn from him. And ultimately share his message because it got to the point where I was like, I have to tell someone this. It was just too much information. And typically when people want to, it's for a loved one. And so I call that person up or I get in touch with that person and say, hey, so-and-so has come through. Would you like me to share this information with you? And I've never had someone say no. Everyone's always like, yes. In this case, there was no person to ask permission. This is just for everybody. So I've just got to put it out there. And I hope whoever finds it can use it in a way that helps them in their lives.
Did you ask him any questions about the afterlife, what it's like, what we can expect? Did you have any discussions around that at all? Or
no, I didn't ask him any of that. He just wanted to talk. So he was just telling me things and I was just receiving. I didn't really ask him very much. I really don't ask those questions very much. I don't really explore that side. I'm shown different aspects of it, but perhaps I should start exploring that a bit more. He did tell me that he loves his daughter so much. Like he's so proud of her. He says she's really, 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 and more artistic and creative than him. She doesn't have great people around her, unfortunately, very much like him. And what he would really love for her to do is set up an art school or an art institute for kids who can't afford to go to a school that would help them explore their gifts and talent. Almost like a high school kind of situation, because he was really, really creative and he hated school, but he didn't have anywhere to go where he could have explored his talent, explored his art, which he says is a blessing and also something he wishes he'd been able to experience. So he really wants her to set up this school. And he said she needs a purpose to really, I guess, make life easier for her. So I didn't really ask him about any of that. It was really? More just okay. Him telling me all these things because it's really important for him to get these messages out there. And he's just really grateful. And I get that he does help people who know that he didn't commit suicide. He does want that legacy to be something much greater than just suicide and heroin. There might be stuff coming out next year. He's pushing really hard to get that truth out. But no, I didn't ask him about any of that.
What about, since you just mentioned suicide and heroin, did he mention anything about Chris Cornell, who passed not that long ago, and perhaps maybe even Layne Staley, because they all knew each other, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. I'm pretty sure they did. No, he didn't say anything about them. He talked about John Lennon and how John Lennon was helping him when he was a musician. There are a lot of similarities. You could say Kurt was our generation's John Lennon, or Gen X, millennials' John Lennon. So John was definitely trying to help him and do the best he could to keep him safe. But
John Lennon, many people think that he was way, way ahead of his time, just in his lyrics and everything else. So
was Kurt. Kurt was way ahead of their time. You could just say they're both prophets in a sense, that in the way Kurt was behaving in the 90s, we went from like Guns N' Roses to Kurt Cobain in like a year. Axl Rose versus Kurt Cobain, that's a very different energy. He was really kind. He was pro women's rights. He was pro gay. Like he was holding his, showing men it's totally cool to be like a rock star and a dad, which is really similar to what John Lennon did. John Lennon kind of quit music and went and did the dad thing for a while. He was a very active parent. And even John was very experimental in his music and dedicated to his art. So there's a lot of similarities. So he talked to me a lot about John Lennon and about him and protecting and influencing him. Even John Lennon's son, Sean, he wishes Francis and Sean would hang out more and both sort of create these art institutes to help people develop their art and their talent. Because there's so many people out there that have amazing talent and amazing creative ability, and they become like software developers. Really,
well,
it's sad.
Maybe that's what they want to do. Good point.
Well,
though.
They got to pay the bills. They got to pay the bills, and it's fine. Pay the bills, but
right brain talent versus left brain talent.
Yeah, I think they just want people to not give up everything to go pay the bills. Like you can do both, and it's important to always foster that creativity inside yourself.
Agreed. Yeah. Anything else that you want to tell us about this experience?
I'm just really grateful and humbled, and hope whoever hears this, it helps them open up to their own creativity and stay true to themselves. He just wants everyone to know what you see in the media and what you see in the entertainment industry is very, very controlled, very controlled. And so be mindful and discerning in regards to what you consume. And the most dangerous thing for those industries is someone they can't control.
Which he was, pretty much, right?
He couldn't control Kurt Cobain, even no matter how much heroin you tried to give him. He would go in the opposite direction. He would go, that's nice, and he just would do his own thing. He was very dedicated to his art, and he was happy being his authentic self. That's really something to admire and look up to and aspire to. For all the people who are in the entertainment and media industries, to be safe, you know, be mindful and be safe and take care of yourself and just know and be aware of what is going on there.
Not that I know much about the music industry, even though I was a musician for a long time, but it's a very interesting place. Let's put it that way. Some people think it's a dark, dark place. I never really saw that up close, but I don't know.
I think it can be. I think like all things, it has both aspects. You just need to be aware of who you hire. You know, who you hire as a manager, who you work with as a label. And as long as you're mindful and intentional and are aware of what could, you'll be okay. I don't think it's all dark. I don't think it's all good. I think it's like everything in life. There's aspects of both.
I don't think it's all dark either, but like I say, it's a very interesting experience, but that's probably a discussion for another day.
It's the commodification that he doesn't want. He doesn't want people to fall into that trap. And that's a really hard trap to get out of once you're in it.
Well, it's very hard though, because a label or an entity, whoever is basically footing the bill, is basically a bank. They invest in certain artists or products, right? And they have to recoup, and that artist has to do 4 or 5 albums or they lose money. If you were investing in something, you'd probably want to see a return too. Unfortunately, those products are human beings. I think all of us, when he was alive, could see that he wasn't really comfortable with the industry.
I guess I got it, but I didn't get really sucked into it or understand it or really even care. So for me, it was a surprise. I didn't really know much about him as a person.
One of the things I did want to mention is that you've had mediumistic type experiences since you were a child. So do you think over time that your skills actually get sharper, or are they about the same?
I definitely think the more and more I just accept them and open up to them and allow them. Oh, sorry. One more thing. Kurt wants everyone to know that his bandmates, Chris and Dave, are wonderful people. Just such good, kind, nice people. And he wishes he had been kinder to them and treated them differently when he was alive. And he could not have done and created what he created with Nirvana without them, in the way that, you know, they are just wonderful people. And he just wants everyone to know that. He really appreciates them and loves them.
Good for him. Hopefully that gets out to them.
He just wants everyone to know they're great guys. And they had nothing to do with it, that. They had nothing to do with anything that happened to him. And they actually were really supportive of him. And I get that. Especially Dave knows a lot more than he'll ever say about everything that's happened. And Chris is kind of in denial. So anyways, they had nothing to do with it. They're really good guys. They really did love him and appreciate him. And they really do wish he was still around. And he did want to leave Nirvana and do more like singer-songwriter, unplugged type of music without them. And it had nothing to do with them. It was just him as an artist. That's what he wanted to explore and do. But anyways, thank you, Kurt. So I think to answer your question, to circle back, I think the more you allow your gifts to just open up, the more comes through. And I think as a kid, I was quite scared of it all. It was really scary because no one was around telling me that A, this was normal, or B, showing me how to manage it. Now that I know how to manage it and stay safe and I'm comfortable with it, it seems to be that more and more is happening. And I also think we live in a time period, especially now, of insane change. Like everything is changing We're being asked we're being asked to really evolve rapidly. And I think people from the other side are seeing this and they're trying to help more. I think they want to help. And I guess as I evolve, the messages I'm getting are coming in from different sources. So last year, I accidentally had a conversation with Princess Diana. And then a few months ago, I accidentally had a conversation with JFK Jr. And
Wow.
so
Okay.
that wasn't as long and profound as my conversations with Kurt. He just wanted to hang out. It was really nice. With them, they just wanted to share very direct messages to clarify some issues going on. I was taken aback because I'd never talked to people who had been famous like that before. And so I did a lot of, who is this? Who am I speaking to? And they checked out, so.
How do you do that, by the way? Because I've been told by many speakers, mediums like you, where they have to be very careful about entities that come through because sometimes they're not who they say they are. So how do you kind of check them out?
First of all, I've somehow set up this system where I will only receive information through what I call my spirit. And spirit kind of lives when I'm in a meditative state on the right side of, I don't even want to call it channeling, when I'm just having conversations, they come through on this right side. And then when there are other things that I can't trust or that I'm not going to speak to, it's more of this left side, bottom side. So, like Kurt's entities that I could see were coming through on the bottom left. And I was like, oh no, bye bye. And just some things that I've come across are always on the left. So, if they're coming through on the right, I'm like, all right. And then I ask them who they are. And I'm like, well, show me. How do I know it's you? Show me. And they'll give me insight into things, they'll start opening up their world and showing me the energy. And usually it's the exact opposite of what I've seen in the media. And I can feel it in my body. It's like a yes in my body, in my stomach, and it's the truth. Like you can feel the truth of it. So with Princess Diana, what she was showing me was the exact opposite of what was being portrayed in the media. And I was actually kind of taken aback because it's the exact opposite of what's going on. Not that I'm invested in the royal family and their narrative in any way, but I was actually investigating Harry and Meghan and their relocation to the US and the Netflix and the book and all this stuff was coming out. And I was just like, this is weird. This is really weird. So I did a meditation just to kind of check out their energy. And she came through and was like, there's some bad stuff going on. She was really worried about Harry and his mental health and a possible suicide later on when this all falls apart. And she was showing me Meghan's manipulation tactics. And she showed me her son Will and his wife Kate are really, really good people. And based on the media narrative, I thought the opposite. I thought the royal family was just a bunch of mean old white people, and Harry and Meghan had to get out of there. And the opposite was true. And she just showed me exactly what was going on. It made sense. And then I asked her about her own death. And she just got really like solemn and said she made bad decisions. She should have never gotten involved with Dodi and his family. She said that being in any sort of relationship with Dodi and being in any sort of relationship with his father and the family was a bad decision. And had she made another decision, she'd still be alive. But she really didn't go into whether or not she was killed or was an accident. She kind of owned the fact that that was a really bad decision. She had made bad decisions. And a lot of what her concern for Harry was the way he was going about dealing with the media. And she had a lot of regrets around how she had used the media to try to get back at the royal family and all the things she had done, the interviews and the books. She was like, I made so many bad decisions. Yes, get the truth out there, but not in that way. So she was just really worried for him and for his mental health. And in a few years, when his relationship with Meghan does break down, what's going to happen? And she was really upset with her ex-husband for not keeping him safe. She said he didn't keep Harry safe. Like he was very open to manipulation and like predators, really. at William and Kate, like she's really proud of them, and they're just nice, good people, just parents raising nice kids. Like, I didn't get any of the weird stuff that people say about the royal family.
This was recently, though, right?
This was last, maybe, like, August, before all the Netflix and the book and all that stuff. Like, I'd heard that that was coming out, and I was just like, oh, man, that didn't feel right to me. I was like, this is feeling weird. And my mom was visiting, so I was like, hey, I'll do a meditation. Let's get the goss. And I'll just see what comes up with their energy. And I don't usually do this kind of stuff. I don't really care. But then there was this whole thing around Harry's reincarnated. I think he's had a couple reincarnations. It was like Henry VIII, Edward VIII, and now he's coming as Harry. And this whole just trying to destroy the monarchy thing. Meghan's probably Anne Boleyn. And it's just a mess. It's just a karmic mess. So a lot of people are responding to this in a collective way because it's bringing up all our trauma, having to live under these crazy kings and queens who at the whim would like have us burned and murdered. And it's just no way to live, right? So he's come in, but him and his brother have been together in past lives. The royal family is just this karmic mess of people who just keep coming in to try to do this. It's just the same thing over and over again. It's like, guys, can we just not do this anymore?
Royal Family Karma actually sounds like a band name, come to think of it.
It could be. So with that family, it's the same thing. It's don't believe anything you see in the media. It's the opposite. Everything is the opposite and yuck. So Harry, please don't do anything to hurt yourself.
What kind of advice do you have for someone who has a kind of experience like you did, maybe not with famous people, but someone coming through? Any advice?
For someone who all of a sudden finds themselves in a situation where a dead person is talking to them. So I have people that I can go to who have honed their ability. So it's important to have a support person or support network of people who have experience with, I guess, other dimensions. Get a variety of people because everyone sort of has their own way of doing it. They also have their own interpretation of how the spirit world works. So a lot of people's interpretation, I don't necessarily agree with. That's not my experience with it. So find people who you feel like in your body are telling you the truth and giving you good advice. Always be cynical. So cynicism is important when dealing with the spirit world. And discernment.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, like, is this who I'm talking to? Okay, well then prove it. And, you know, Kurt's case, he was like, fine, I'll turn your fans on and off. I'll move your Kindle around. Here's a kangaroo. Ha ha ha. Want to smoke?
That was him with the kangaroo or?
Yeah, he thought it was hilarious. Yeah, he was like, all right, I'll bring a kangaroo into your yard and we can play jumpy jumpy. And so they'll show you things about their life that no one else is going to know that. And a lot of times when I'm dealing with entities that aren't the people, as soon as I start to ask questions, like identify yourself, they'll give up immediately. Like the bad ones are like tricksters. So as soon as you start to ask questions, they'll do this like laugh thing where they're like, ha, and they just kind of go away because they know you're not going to put up with their BS. So you can kind of flush them out really quickly. They don't have the persistence that the actual spirit has. That true spirit will be persistent and consistent. And it's like this truth that the energy doesn't change, whereas the trickster ones, they'll try to put on the guise of, and then they can't really maintain that energy. So you can flush them out.
They can't sustain it.
Yeah, they can't sustain it. So that's my advice. It's very much an energetic thing. You need to practice, and not everything that comes through is accurate. For me, it started with talking to friends and family. This person is coming through. Here's what they're sharing with me. And then getting them to verify the information and making sure the information that you're getting is true. So I would say start with friends and family before you start letting people who are global celebrities come through, because you've got to make sure the information you're getting is accurate. Start small. Go from there.
Remember, be cynical.
Be cynical, be discerning, and keep yourself safe and clear the energy out. Every time you have a conversation, you clear that energy, you set your boundaries, so that you're safe and protected.
Excellent. Christina, thanks again for joining us. I have a thought that there might be a part two or a part three. This is going to get interesting. In the meantime, how can our listeners find more about you online?
Oh, you can find me at bigbeautifulsky.com. It's my website, or on Instagram at bigbeautifulsky. Any questions, just send me an email or a message. I'm happy to help you out.
There you go. Good advice indeed. You've been listening to Closer to Venus. I'm Johnny Burke. If you enjoyed today's episode, please consider subscribing. For more info, go to closertovenus.com. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.